Few figures in Michigan history are as well known as Henry Ford, but the author of a new book about Ford believes that others deserve much of the credit for the inventions of the automobile and the assembly line. Scott Pohl talked with Lawrence Goldstone about his book. What's it called, Scott?
Well, Mark, it's called Drive, Henry Ford, George Selden, and the Race to Invent the Auto Age. In the book, Goldstone points out that others, including Lansing's Ransom Olds, did more of the actual inventing than Ford did. I asked Lawrence Goldstone about the pressure to find something new to say about a man whose history is as well documented as Henry Ford's.
I have found, and as has my wife, she's also a historian, that depending on what angle you come at something from, there is new material. I did not take on Henry Ford until I had done a previous book on innovation called Birdman about the Wright brothers and Glenn Curtis. And Ford played a possible pivotal role, although albeit a small one, and he got me curious, and I began to look, and I realized that the angle that I was looking at Ford from had not been taken by other historians.
And that angle is?
Well, I was more interested in Ford as his role in the process of innovation, in the innovation cycle that took place in the end of the 19th and early 20th century, than I was in all the personality foibles. I don't really talk about a lot of things that many of the biographies focus on, but I am much more interested in Ford's role as a businessman, as an innovator, as an inventor, or a non-inventor. And what I discovered was that he was eerily similar to Steve Jobs.
I'm glad you brought up the parallel you see with Steve Jobs. You compare Ford to Steve Jobs in terms of having an ability to improve products based on the demands of the marketplace as opposed to being an inventor. Of his skills, was that of being a salesman, maybe, his greatest skill of all?
That was part of it. Now, I know you had asked me to read, and that is actually the paragraph that I had chosen. So would you like me to do that now?
Yeah, let's do that now.
Okay, here goes. Many Americans believe that Henry Ford invented the modern automobile, or at least the assembly line and mass production. He did neither. In fact, there is no significant invention in automotive technology for which Ford could personally take credit. Nor was he the first man to consider the egalitarian possibilities of automobile marketing. Ford's genius, like that of Steve Jobs a century later, was in his ability to improve and to adapt to the demands of the marketplace virtually any process or component with which he came in contact. That is a sum up, pretty much, of what I thought his skills were. Now, to go back and answer your question, Ford would have bristled at the thought of being called a salesman. He believed in sales, but he would not have seen himself as a salesman. But in fact, he was so natural at it that he succeeded in selling without really making an attempt to cultivate sales expertise or techniques.
Steve Jobs, of course, had Steve Wozniak doing the inventing, if that's the right word. Did Henry Ford have a version of a Steve Wozniak?
Henry Ford had a string of versions. He didn't have the one person. But Henry Ford, one of his other skills was a preternatural ability to judge character and to judge people who could help him and stay with him as long as he needed them and then leave. For example, Ford famously did not drink, did not smoke, did not carouse, and looked down on anyone who did. He thought these were terrible flaws of character. Yet when he needed someone to build auto bodies early on, he chose the Dodge brothers, who were two hard-drinking, brawling, foul-mouthed, everything that Ford would not have liked. They both died basically of, they supposedly died of the flu, but they basically died of cirrhosis. Later on, when he needed someone to set up mass production, Ford knew nothing about assembly lines and mass production. He hired a man named Walter Flanders, who was worse than the Dodge brothers. He also was a heavy drinker. He also was a bar fighter, and he was a notorious womanizer. And each of these hires the Dodge brothers, Walter Flanders, Harold Wills, who was a brilliant engineer. He hired a man named Norval Hawkins to run his sales force right after Hawkins was released from prison for embezzlement. None of these people stayed with him. Eventually, he got rid of everyone. Somebody called it the Ford Alumni Club. So he didn't have a Steve Wozniak, but what he had was an ability to choose people to perform tasks that he could not or should not perform himself, get everything he could out of them, and then cast them aside.
My guest is Lawrence Goldstone. His new book is Drive: Henry Ford, George Selden, and the Race to Invent the Auto Age. Now, the other man mentioned in the title of your book is George Selden. That's a name that will be new to some, recognizable but maybe still fuzzy to others. Remind us of who George Selden is.
George Selden was the son of a judge who turned down the opportunity to be Lincoln's vice president in 1864, who defended Susan B. Anthony. Selden himself became a patent lawyer but was also an inventor. And in the late 1870s, built a prototypical motor that kind of ran a little, and designed and was going to put this motor, a new invention, the internal combustion engine, which was new, using a new fuel, gasoline. Remember, the first refinery was not built in the United States until basically 1860. And take that new fuel and this new kind of motor and mount it in what he called a road carriage. And he applied for a patent in 1879 and didn't get the patent. And because he was a patent lawyer and he knew he was ahead of his time and he had no money to actually build it, he kept the patent in play until 1896 when it was finally granted, he kept revising it. And that patent, which was for something that was never built, was ultimately bought up by a consortium that had also bought up a company that was running a fleet of electric taxis in New York City. And because the Whitney cabal needed money, they had bought up the electric taxi company and were running it into the ground, and they were going to be sued by their investors. They needed money. They bought Selden's patent. They said, this is the controlling patent on all automobiles, and they proceeded to sue everyone in sight. So Selden himself was long out of it by then, but Selden's vision of a road carriage, what we now would call an automobile, powered by a gasoline internal combustion engine, that vision remained.
What was Selden's relationship to Ford?
Selden actually had no relationship to Ford until 1907, I believe. Selden was completely out of it. By the time Selden got his patent, he thought people were going to come and solicit him, and no one did. And he was in Rochester, New York, as a patent lawyer. Didn't have a lot of money. When the Whitney people bought up his patent, they paid him a certain amount of money plus royalties. The Whitney company, the electric vehicle company was the name of the company, went and essentially sued everyone. A group of people that they sued got together and formed a sub-monopoly. Ford would not join. They would not let Ford in. Ford continued to produce automobiles. And they sued him. He was one of the many independent automakers that were sued. And during the course of the lawsuit in 1907, George Selden was brought to New York with something. Somebody built his supposed road carriage, which was not, that's a whole other story. It wasn't really anything and couldn't run. And that was the first time in 1907, the first time and the last time that Henry Ford laid eyes on George Selden.
Your cast of characters includes names that most of us are familiar with to one extent or another, including Carl Benz and Louis Chevrolet. You also include Lansing's favorite son, Ransom Olds. What role does he play in your book?
Ransom Olds actually did many of the things that Henry Ford got credit for. He was the first man to build an automobile on what could be called an assembly line. He was the first man to market automobiles to people other than the rich. The famous curved dash Olds. He had a wonderful advertising slogan, "Come ride with me, Lucille, in my brand new Oldsmobile." Ransom Olds may well have ended up getting many of the accolades that have gone to Ford. One of the things Ford had that Ransom Olds did not have was an absolute distrust of money people. Ford would take in investors, do what he wants, infuriate them, and then leave without producing the product that he said he would produce, and then move on to somebody else. And he did this until a company came along and a group of investors came along that were willing to back him in doing exactly what he wanted. And then he built his cars, and then he ultimately bought them out. Ransom Olds was different. He was building the curved dash Olds. It sold 4,000 vehicles in 1904, which was a stunning amount. He was building them on an assembly line. He had exactly the right idea of marketing. He took in some investors to expand. Those investors wanted to build the big luxury cars that they thought everybody wanted, the big expensive cars, $3,000 and $4,000 at the time, which was ridiculously expensive. The curved dash Olds was going for $650. And they essentially forced him out of his own company. He went back into business in REO, Ransom E. Olds, built the REO Speedwagon, which later became the name of a rock group, but never really made it to the degree that his vision should have allowed.
The book is Drive, Henry Ford, George Selden, and the Race to Invent the Auto Age. The author is Lawrence Goldstone. Thank you for joining us on Current State.
Thank you, Scott.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.